Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, former presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Today is Thursday, May the 18th. And first, a word from our sponsors. You've probably heard of paleo and wondered, is this just another diet trend? Experts at the Paleo Secret say it's actually the perfect anti-diet with no counting calories or depriving yourself. Instead, they're about enjoying the whole, delicious, and satisfying foods your body was designed to eat the way nature intended. They're going directly against what Big Pharma and government have said about health, with hundreds of thousands of success stories to back them up. For a limited time, you can get 50% off their famous 30-day challenge risk-free. Visit www.thepaleosecret.com/freedom today and reclaim your health, youth, and energy. It's one of the greatest freedoms you could have. Hello, ladies and gents. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Freedom Report podcast today. Today is a sad day for those who were interested in the life and career of a man by the name of Roger Ailes, obviously a very controversial figure, but someone who actually played an important role in my life and many other people's lives as well. For those of you who may not be completely familiar with my background, my career background, I actually spent 2 years as a producer at the Fox Business Network. I was a producer for the show Freedom Watch on the Fox Business Network, which was managed and by Roger Ailes. He was president of Fox News at the time, and Fox Business was a spinoff of that. But Roger Ailes did have a lot of oversight in what went on there at the Fox Business Network. And I actually have a very interesting story to share with you all. I'm going to read to you first the story from the Washington Post this morning, which I thought was very fair and balanced. It was a very good story that I wanted to share with you all up front before I tell you my own personal anecdote about how Roger Ailes played a key role in my personal career. As a matter of fact, I think that I probably wouldn't be here sitting here talking to you today. I probably would not have ever had an opportunity to run for president in the United States last year if it wasn't for the amazing opportunity to go and produce television at the Fox Business Network, which I'm obviously very grateful for. So I want to read to you this story from the Washington Post. And after that, I'm going to tell you all a really cool personal story about Roger Ailes that I think you will all appreciate. And this is in the obituary section of the Washington Post, titled "Roger Ailes, Architect of Conservative TV Juggernaut Fox News, is Dead at 77. This is by Mark Fisher, written this morning. Roger Ailes, who mastered the art of selling political candidates like Hollywood celebrities and was the architect of conservative-oriented TV news, died Thursday at 77. He was the longtime chairman and chief executive of the Fox News Channel, building it over 2 decades into a politically influential juggernaut until his abrupt ouster last year amid sexual harassment allegations. His family confirmed the death in a statement. No cause or location was reported. At Fox News, Mr. Ailes presided over a cable outlet that combined television news from a conservative perspective with the rabble-rousing rhetoric of right-wing talk radio to produce a singularly influential media machine. He was a skilled showman, a savvy political operator, and a proudly plebeian counterpoint to the East Coast elite that he believed dominated the news business. And boy, he was absolutely right about that. Before we had Fox News, it was all elitist left-wing media. To Democrats and liberals, he was a manipulator of the news, a puppet master who used his network to turn minor stories into blazing scandals, ostensibly in service of his personal politics. To Republicans and conservatives, he was an essential counterweight, a tough but fair partisan, a middle American from a blue-collar background who gleefully and effectively poked holes in the left-leaning biases of the media establishment. The title of biographies about him, 4 were published within 7 years at a peak in Fox's popularity during the Obama administration, demonstrated the wrath and resentment he could engender. He was a, quote, dark genius, quote, the loudest voice in the room, ruler of a, quote, propaganda machine. Mr. Ailes eschewed political labels and preferred to portray himself as a craftsman of the airwaves, more concerned about how to frame a shot or drive a story than about the fate of individual candidates or policies. He told a biographer that his dream for America was that it be allowed to return to its best self, which he put in the Midwest in about 1955. As founding chief executive of Fox News in 1996, Mr. Ailes defined the channel in opposition to the traditional journalism of CNN and the liberal bent of MSNBC. And he brought Fox from a distant third to clear dominance, riding to the top along the wave of public dismay that arose over President Bill Clinton's affair with a White House intern. Mr. Ailes' reign at Fox ended abruptly in 2016 in the middle of the presidential campaign after an on-air host at Fox News, Gretchen Carlson, alleged that Mr. Ailes had sabotaged her career when she refused to have sex with him. Following Carlson's accusations, 25 other women, including Fox's most prominent female anchor, Megyn Kelly, came forward to say that Ailes had sexually harassed them over his 5 decades in the TV business. Fox's parent company quickly pushed Mr. Ailes to resign his positions, though he said the allegations, which ranged from kissing women against their will to telling women that they had to provide him with favors if they wanted their careers to flourish, were false. Mr. Ailes' bosses, Lachlan and James Murdoch, the sons of Fox's longtime owner Rupert Murdoch, announced the resignation in a statement that emphasized the company's commitment to maintaining a work environment based on trust and respect. I say Murdoch, ladies and gentlemen, because that's actually how the Murdochs pronounce it. They're Australian. You realize this is Rupert Murdoch. If you ever got a chance to hear Rupert Murdoch say his own name, that's the actual correct pronunciation, at least in his own native tongue. Fox paid Carlson $20 million to settle her harassment claim against Mr. Ailes. Within weeks, Ohio University removed Mr. Ailes' name from the newsroom it had named after one of its most famous alumni. The university also returned to Mr. Ailes a $500,000 gift he had made to his alma mater. Less than a month after he left Fox, Mr. Ailes reemerged as leader of the prep camp, where businessman and Republican presidential nominee prepared for his TV debates against former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee. Like Richard M. Nixon, the first presidential candidate Mr. Ailes ever worked with, he seemed driven as much by social and class resentments as by ideology or a lust for power. And yeah, I can confirm that because Rupert Murdoch, if you're not familiar, the history of Rupert Murdoch as well as Roger Ailes in many ways was of an anti-establishment bent. Rupert Murdoch saw the bias that existed actually in the newspapers in the United Kingdom. And Rupert Murdoch actually cut his teeth by destroying the elitist establishment with the sort of New York Post style journalism that you see today in the UK. And he became a tycoon, mostly of like tabloid journalism, but also a lot of very sincere journalism as well. And now these people, of course, own the Wall Street Journal and many other fine media establishments. But they saw themselves very much as anti-establishment, which, of course, in the 70s and 80s, they would have been, because there just really weren't any major news outlets that were competitive with the elite left-wing media establishment. This is just me spitballing here, ladies and gents. This isn't, of course, in the Washington Post, but this is just my own personal understanding of history and my knowledge that I get to share with you. This is something unique that you get, a little bit of an insider perspective on the anti-establishment media networks. Roger Ailes was an employee of Rupert Murdoch, the worldwide media tycoon, but wielded power on his own too, regularly being courted by Republican presidential candidates. Quote, at Fox, Ailes has ushered in the era of post-truth politics, concluded David Brock, a conservative-turned-liberal activist who wrote a book on Mr. Ailes called The Fox Effect. Quote, the facts no longer matter, only what is politically expedient, sensationalistic, and designed to confirm the pre-existing opinions of a large audience. Maybe you should remove the beam from your own eye before you try and remove the moat from another one, Mr. David Brock. Fox gave intensive coverage to stories that later collapsed under closer inspection. The idea that Barack Obama, the first black U.S. president, was born outside the United States, or that Obama's health reform initiative would impose death panels to determine which Americans might be refused medical care, or that human behavior played no role in global climate change. Many Democrats dismissed Mr. Ailes' network as a partisan agitator. Quote, Fox News often operates as either the research arm or the communications arm of the Republican Party, said Anita Dunn, communications director in the Obama White House, she said in 2009. And my personal anecdote, the story of my rise to work at Fox will be related to that topic, which I'll get to a little bit later. Critics and admirers alike agreed that Fox was a mirror of Mr. Ailes' ideas about content and presentation. Quote, Roger Ailes is not on the air. Roger Ailes does not ever show up on camera. And yet everybody who does is a reflection of him, radio talk host Rush Limbaugh, whose TV show Mr. Ailes produced in the early 90s, once said. Mr. Ailes often responded to his critics by saying that they intentionally elided Fox's straight-ahead news reporting with the frankly conservative views of its commentators. He noted that the network regularly broke stories critical of leading conservatives, including George W. Bush's arrest as a young man for drunken driving, a story that Fox reported the week before the 2000 election when Bush won his first term as president. Mr. Ailes, derided on the left as a Republican kingmaker, was actually more of a, quote, entertainer. New Yorker writer and Harvard historian Jill Lepore wrote, quote, he's also a boogeyman, an easy target for those who want to believe that the conservative movement was manipulated from above rather than a naturally occurring political phenomenon. Several academic studies of Fox's content concluded that the network, as the Project for Excellence in Journalism put in 2006, was, quote, measurably more one-sided than the other networks, and Fox journalists were more opinionated on the air. But a study in 2007 by the Center for Media and Public Affairs, a media watchdog nonprofit that calls itself nonpartisan but which some liberal groups consider conservative, found that Fox News' statements about Republican and Democratic presidential candidates were almost evenly divided between positive and negative. Now, before I go on with the Washington Post article, let me just tell you a brief little anecdote that's related to that. When I was there at Fox Business, in the beginning, I was a fiery ideologue, right? I'm pushing the most hardcore libertarian show that has maybe ever been produced, like, right? Save perhaps the John Stossel show. And while I'm there, we have an executive producer, a gentleman by the name of Gary Schreier, who is someone, I mean, he was hot-tempered, he was fiery, but the guy was actually truly fair and balanced. And he acted as a counterweight to my passion to push libertarian ideas onto Fox. And I was really surprised because he would demand, if we ever pushed a story there while I was a producer at Fox, if I ever came up with a story, he would demand that we would have somebody on who would actually disagree with us, right? If we were pushing a viewpoint, our executive producer demanded that we were fair and balanced. And it was kind of shocking to me because I guess I kind of expected that there would just be a beating over the head of conservative or libertarian ideas, right? That there would be no problem with partisanship. Well, they didn't have a problem with partisanship or with ideologues, but they did have a problem. My executive producer did have a problem with us not having someone on the other side, with someone who would disagree with us. And the reason was, the truth of the matter is, the reason why they did that is because that is good TV. I mean, it doesn't make for interesting television to sit there and produce a TV show and everybody agrees with you and it's an echo chamber. Actually, the reason I think why Fox News has been so successful is because the executive producers there, the producers there are reined in. They are told that they need to have opposing opinions on air because that is just good for ratings. That's just good business. So, you know, the sort of demonization of Fox News as being this sort of propaganda network, I think is unfair because I've seen up front, and ladies and gentlemen, you know me. If something is what it is, I'm going to tell it like it is. I'm going to tell you the truth because, you know, I have an interest in being objective. I have my biases, but I'm fair. And it was actually my time at Fox that made me more fair. It was actually my time at Fox that made me more objective. And I found that while I was there, there were some things that I was objectively wrong about. And the reason why is because there were so many brilliant reporters at Fox, which is something that libertarians laughed at me for saying at a debate once. There are so many brilliant reporters that when I would take a story to go get confirmed with some of the other journalists there, they would do the real hard work of reporting, and many times they would debunk our stories, right? That isn't to say that, like, sometimes conspiracy theories like the birth certificate and things like that don't make themselves onto television, right? Because you can't control what Donald Trump is going to say on your airwaves, like, and you know, maybe Sean Hannity is going to have some leeway to say what he wants to say. But if you're a reporter or a journalist at Fox, you're going to get fact-checked. You're going to get fact-checked by your own network. And quite frankly, I found that refreshing. I really liked that because my executive producer taught me so much about journalism and about objectivity, about how to research. But I think probably what was the most distressing part of my career was that once I went into the Fox machine and I started to learn about how to do real reporting, real professional television production, was that some of my own libertarian friends started to not believe me. And here's a story I think you all are really going to love. Do you remember when Glenn Beck was on Fox and he started talking about FEMA camps. Do you remember that? That was actually kind of a big deal because Glenn Beck actually brought up the tapes that Alex Jones was producing. And this was my first experience with starting to see through the veil of InfoWars and Prison Planet and Alex Jones and all those guys, because the judge and I were kind of excited. We were like, oh my gosh, like Glenn Beck is reporting on FEMA camps. Oh my God, they're gonna put us all in a FEMA camps, you know, where all you have to eat all day are the gay frogs that Obama turned gay with chemicals. Well, what was amazing was that, all right, so Glenn reports that, right? He says he's going to report on it. And the next day he didn't do it. So I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, I want to find out about this. So I take the information that Glenn Beck had found. I took his reporting and I went down into the basement of what they call the brain room at Fox News, which is a room full of the best and brightest journalists, I think, in the entire country. Some of the most brilliant legal minds, some of the most brilliant military minds. I mean, if you had a question, like you could ask the most random question, like what is the oil price of the petrodollar, you know, compared to, you know, the Iranian currency, and they could do like complex calculations. And that was the place where like the real journalism was happening. But I take this story about FEMA camps that had been like, you know, Glenn Beck had sort of teased out, and I went because I wanted to see if it was true, because if it was true, well, God, I mean, you know, you can win a Pulitzer Prize for that kind of reporting. So we took Alex Jones's videos about the, you know, these camps, et cetera, et cetera. We took what Glenn Beck had, and I went to the brain room. And well, here's the thing. They had the perfect objective viewpoint. It was they didn't sit there and go, BS, conspiracy theory, right? No, they were just like me. They were like, oh my God, well, if this is true, we want to hear it too, because these people can also win a Pulitzer Prize. Like if you can find out, like this is part of my sort of my, I won't say my conspiracy derangement syndrome, right? So it's part of my, it was definitely part of my, the time when I started getting really interested in debunking conspiracy theories. But it was because they were very objective and they were like, well, let's find this out. Let's work on it together. So we start, you know, threading the needle, right? We're starting to do some research. And the brain room is really excited because they're like, well, this is a huge story if it's true. And Glenn talked about it. So he must have had some factual basis for the reporting. Well, we get into the research and we pull what Alex Jones has put out and stuff like that. And we're like, there's nothing to this. Like after everything, it was all of this, right? It's like unraveling a sweater, like with one thread. We're just pulling the string and pulling the string and pulling the string. And every time that we started like trying to find some real hard evidence, we found nothing. There was nothing there. And I mean, I was obviously kind of disappointed because I thought we were, you know, Freedom Watch and the judge, we were going to get to break something. But it showed to me the flaws in the sort of conspiracy thinking, because what they'll do is they'll take anecdotes, they'll take, you know, things that, you know, maybe members of Congress have said. Like here's a good example, Dennis Kucinich, right? Great guy, Democrat, but, you know, not 100% sane, right? Like, don't get me wrong, I love the guy, but he sponsored a bill in like 2007 that was like all about climate change and like, you know, saving our environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that he wanted to prevent against was quote unquote chemtrails, which is what conspiracy theorists will say. They'll look at the congressional record and Dennis Kucinich wrote this bill, and in it he says, you know, we have to stop things like chemtrails. And so the conspiracy theorists are like, see, it's true. A member of congressman said it in the red, into the historical record. So this is evidence. Well, it's actually not evidence. I mean, the problem is because, you know, not all congressmen are 100% sane. Remember the guy who said that we have to get the military off the island of Guam because it would tip over, right? If we had too many military members on Guam, you'd tip over. Yeah, so it's Hank Johnson, right? You can't always look at what congressmen say into the public record and say, this is the truth, right? So remember, because Dennis Kucinich also said that I think he saw UFOs or something like that. Now, if a congressman says it, yes, you're going to give more credit to it, but that's not exactly what we would call evidence. So me in the brain room debunked Alex Jones. There were no FEMA camps. The reason why people thought there were was because after Hurricane Katrina, a congressman proposed legislation to build rescue facilities because they realized they had screwed up so badly in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina that they proposed relocation centers, and it wasn't FEMA camps. It was a place for people to go so that they didn't have to house them in a dirty arena. right? So they wouldn't have to house him in a football stadium again. Everybody remembers that. But that was the thing, was that like the conspiracy theorists had taken that and they had moved the needle, and they had made all these assumptions. And then they took something from like the Congressional Record and they were like, see, there was a bill that was proposed. Well, did you know that that bill wasn't actually passed? They never built the FEMA centers. They never built the quote unquote FEMA camps. So that was like my first touch of sort of, it began my disillusionment with not just some of the alternative media, right? So after that, if any of you know me, like even in more in-depth history, then you know I did a big debate, skeptics versus conspiracists debate, where I debunked, chemtrail conspiracies, and I debunked vaccine conspiracies, and I debunked, I debunked 9/11. I debunked the 9/11 conspiracy. And it was all because I had access to a wealth of knowledge at the Brain Room. And again, remember, reporters have an incentive to report the truth, because in some sense, remember, if they can verify it and with independent third-party sources, there are Pulitzer Prizes to be won for that kind of journalism. So again, I don't want to get too much into bashing conspiracy theories, but I thought you all would just enjoy that story, because when I went to the Brain Room, they took the FEMA camp story and they were like sending me information and we were digging together. It was a very exciting little project that I worked on. But the truth is that there was no there. There was nothing there. We had no real evidence, and so we couldn't report it. And my executive producer, I'm just glad that he never knew that I was actually working on that, because he probably would have slapped me upside the back of the head and said, get out of here, kid. You know, like, come on, quit wasting your time. But yeah, so, and this isn't, that's not the personal anecdotes. That's not the big story that I'm going to tell you about how I got my job at Fox News, which is related to Roger Ailes, which I think you'll all really appreciate. But before I tell you that story, I'm actually going to take a little break for a quick commercial. So wait through the ad and I'll be back after the jump. Do you suffer from obesity, digestive issues, joint pain, or feel fatigue throughout the day? How about high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or an autoimmune disease? With hundreds of thousands of success stories, the Paleo Secrets 30-Day Challenge is here to help. The side effects? Boundless energy, improved sleep, effortless weight loss, and even clearer skin. For a limited time, they're giving 50% off the entire transformation, all 5 free bonuses, as well as access to their private Facebook group starting at $13.50, completely risk-free. Try it at www.thepaleosecret.com/freedom today and reclaim your health, youth, and energy. It's one of the greatest freedoms you could have. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So here's the story that I think you all will enjoy. Some of you may know this story. Some of you who have been working in politics a long time, who have followed my career very closely, might know it. But I think this is something that I was actually telling it to my friend Jeff Carson this morning. He's like, you know what? That's a great story. You know, more people need to know about this about you, especially because a lot of my critics, especially when I ran for president last year, were like, you know, Austin, you haven't done anything. You haven't gotten any experience. You know, what have you done to work hard to show that you actually deserve to be in office for whatever reason, right? And so Jeff was like, well, that's an amazing story. He's like, you got to tell that story. So let me just tell you the story. So when I graduated from college, I went to Missouri State University in about 2004. I graduated. I moved to New York City like the week after graduation. And, you know, I began my career trying to work in the entertainment industry, working in showbiz, right? And you know, in the beginning, it was rough, you know, just like anything. You know, I'm a poor, broke farm boy from Missouri trying to make it in the big city. And I'm sort of juxtaposing myself between doing auditions and like doing the occasional job here and there. And, you know, working, you know, part time. You know, I started working at FAO Schwartz, and then I worked at a technology company later, where I did like business to business telemarketing, selling computers, which was actually a very positive experience for me. But, you know, obviously the whole time I was always trying to like get more entertainment gigs, and my career started to pick up where, you know, around 2006, 2007, I started booking some bigger gigs, right? I'm getting, you know, some background work in some big movies like Richard Gere's movie, The Hoax, I was a little part in. And then I had, you know, independent films that I would cast in because of my fighting skills. I had like wicked nunchuck skills, right? Like I was able to get these really cool jobs. And I started like getting some nice modeling jobs and things like that. And you know, my career's kind of picking up. Well, you know, I took an interest in politics on the side. Around 2007, 2008, you know, I've started to volunteer for Ron Paul's presidential campaign in New York City in my free time. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I got a job at the Libertarian Party. Well, Let's fast forward to around 2008. So we're in 2008, and Ron Paul had dropped out of the presidential race at that time, and I'm working in the Libertarian Party's national office at the National Committee as their volunteer coordinator. And at the time, you know, the Judge Napolitano had a podcast, and the podcast was called Freedom Watch, and it was just a digital thing, right? It was like before he ever got his show. At the time, you know, I'm just like this, you know, lowly volunteer coordinator and trying to figure out how to advance liberty and, you know, building up the Libertarian Party. And, you know, I'm young and idealistic, right? I think I'm like 28-ish years old. At the time I'm thinking, well, how can I advance liberty? Well, really funny. David Bowes, who is the president of the Cato Institute at the time, called a meeting in Washington, D.C., and it was for everybody, all the heads of libertarian orgs and institutions, you know, anybody who was a libertarian could come. And we had it in this big cafeteria area where we could all just kind of sit. And there was, you know, there was a lot of people out there. I think there was probably around 150, maybe 200 people who came to this meeting. And the whole purpose of it was just to be an open forum where we could talk about how to advance libertarian ideas and libertarian principles in the United States. And so everybody's kind of standing up, giving their thoughts. And at the time, Ron Paul, Students for Ron Paul was turning into, had just become Young Americans for Liberty. So the founder, Jeff Frazee, was there. He was actually sitting right next to me at the time. And nobody knew who I was, right? I was just, again, just an activist. And so David Bowes says, hey, everybody just stand up one at a time. Let's hear ideas about how to advance libertarianism. And I remember I stood up at the time and I said, you know what we should all do? We should all work together, use our social networks, right? This is a time when like Facebook was just starting to become a thing, right? I don't think Twitter had even been born yet. And I stood up and I said, let's use all of our combined power and social media that we used for Ron Paul. And he had dropped out already. I said, and we're all looking for something to do. I was like, let's all use this and let's get Judge Napolitano his own show. And I'll never forget, I mean, probably more than half of the people kind of turned and were like, that's never going to happen, right? And stuff like that. And I was like, well, I'll show you. Give me your business cards, right? So I go around that whole room and I collected everybody's business cards and, you know, I shook everybody's hand and Jeff Frazee was there. I remember Jeff Frazee turned around and looked at me and was like, you know what, Austin? That's a great idea. Let's do that. I was like, absolutely, you know, because, you know, the students for Ron Paul, everybody loved the judge and everybody wanted to see him have his own show. And he already had a podcast. So my idea was that we would use all the excitement and energy that we had built up during Ron Paul's initial presidential campaign, and we would try and direct as much traffic as we could towards the judge's podcast so that we would blow up their network, in a sense, right? So I went back to the Libertarian Party, and sure enough, man, you can probably, if you do a search, I mean, I know the website doesn't exist anymore, but there was a website called the Daily Paul. And on the dailypaul.com, you know, that's where everybody would go to talk about Ron Paul stuff. And so I'm posting, you know, on Ron Paul forums, things like, you know, here, the judge's show is at this time. Here's my email address. Here's my contact information. Anybody who wants to help in this project, get in touch with me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And at the time I had like, I had something like 10 or 12 interns who were working for me at the Libertarian Party. It was a beautiful summer. One of the best summers of my entire life, fighting for freedom. Yeah, working at the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. at the time where the LP's headquarters was. It was just a really magical time because I was so passionate and inspired, and I was, you know, inspiring others for liberty. And I was very excited because I thought this is a project that could get some traction. This is something that I could do that could be really successful to advance libertarian ideas in the United States. Sure enough, we drove so much damn traffic to that show that I get a phone call one day, or an email maybe, from Fox, and it's the judge's producer. And the guy's name is George Zooks at the time. He contacted me. He's like, Austin, hey, whatever it is you're doing, please don't stop. Don't stop because it is working. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, well, this is great. Well, this is absolutely wonderful. So yeah, so I double up my production. And then, you know, George wrote to me and was like, Austin, the judge would like to meet with you whenever you can make it to New York. Well, damn, if I didn't buy the first train ticket or bus ticket, man, I think I could only afford bus tickets at the time. So, I mean, I think I bought the very first bus ticket back to New York, right? So, you know, I'm in D.C. at the time, right? I'd moved from New York to go take the job for the Libertarian Party. And so I'm like, okay, well, first bus back to New York so I can go meet the judge. And I went, and I remember the first time I met with the judge, I went and sat down in his office, which is sort of like he's got it set up so it's like a judge's chambers. And I sit down with a judge across from him, and he's like, young man, he's like, if you get me my own show on this network, he's like, you will have a job here. You will be the first person hired to work here for me as my producer. And I was like, whoa. I mean, this is a guy who, like, I was so inspired by the judge because during the Ron Paul campaign around 2007, 2008, I'm in New York City at the time, and I'm reading the judge's books. I remember being on the subway. Gosh, this is how crazy I was, guys. Don't tell anybody this, all right? Like, maybe I shouldn't be telling this story in public. You know, because, like, at the time, like, I was in 2007, 2008, I'm kind of like a broke actor-ish, right? Like, I would play guitar in the subways in Times Square and sing for a little bit of change between auditions so I could eat a cheeseburger, right? Like, poor broke actor guy. Now I'm in D.C. and I'm working. And all of a sudden I'm getting called back to New York to speak to the judge with a promise of a dream job potential, right? Not a promise, but like, you know, if I get the if he gets the show, then it was a promise. And I'm freaking out because the judge was such an inspiration to me. and so I'm like, oh yeah. So I go back to DC and on the bus and you know, I continue my activism, but I'm doing a lot of research. Especially on Fox. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, how can I make this happen? And then I came across the name of a man, Roger Ailes. And so this is how this story ends. Well, so I'm doing some research on Roger Ailes, learning how his rise to power. And while I'm doing this research, I discover that he was an insider in the Richard Nixon administration, right? He and Richard Nixon were best buddies. And Richard Nixon had always suffered from the fact that he wasn't very good on television, right? He wasn't the best looking, right? He couldn't debate with John F. Kennedy as well. You know, JFK just blew him out of the water because he was so handsome. So Roger Ailes wrote a memo that I found and I read, and that memo was called How to Get the GOP on TV. So the concept of Fox News, the network itself, was actually a brainchild of Roger Ailes during the Nixon years. And this was essentially a memo that was to help the Republican Party look good. But what the original plan was, I think Richard Nixon, what he wanted to do, was Nixon wanted to actually put the television network inside the White House. But Roger Ailes was like, no, let's not put a conservative network inside the White House. We don't want to do that, because if we do that, then when the Democrats take over the White House in 4 years or 8 years or wherever, then they're going to control the news network. We shouldn't do that. Let's start up a news network outside, right? And how to get the GOP on TV was the name of the memo. I read the memo. It was absolutely brilliant. It was full of all this demographic research on conservatism and, you know, in the United States and the possibilities of a television channel that would reflect these, you know, broadly reflect these views, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was inspired. I was like, wow, this Roger Ailes is a brilliant man. And you know, sure enough, 20, 25 years, 30 years later, Fox News becomes the number one cable news network. And it's kind of funny because they actually had to threaten the cable providers. I think Rudy Giuliani actually sued or threatened the cable news networks because they didn't want to carry Fox News in New York City. They didn't want to carry Fox. It was anti-competitive. So Giuliani made some sort of a threat with their license, I think. And so, you know, I think it was an attorney at the time, maybe a federal attorney. And Giuliani, you know, made it so that Fox News was carried by the major cable providers in New York City. And that was it. Fox News was born. It was big. It became the biggest news network in the United States, like it still is. And I'm learning all this while I'm working at the Libertarian Party in 2008. And then, of course, I transitioned to the Atlas Network in 2009, but I was still working on the project. It took me about a year to get this all to happen. But while I was at the LP and I had all these interns and I was inspired by the judge and Roger Ailes by this memo, I wrote my own memo that was inspired by what Roger Ailes had written. So I had all my interns go into the Cato Institute, pull in their demographics on libertarians in the United States, what the demographics are, how many there are, what the opportunity is. And I wrote a memo and submitted it to the judge that was not a copy, but definitely a blatant ripoff of Roger Ailes' memo. And my memo was called How to Get Libertarians on TV. Now, I imagine that that memo is somewhere. It's got it probably exists in my old LP email account somewhere. I am not sure. I wish I had a copy of it I could pull up for you, because it was almost a copy, but it was, you know, adapted from conservatives, how to get Republicans, how to get libertarians on TV. Well, if you can believe it, the judge took that memo and went straight to Roger Ailes with it. And Roger Ailes was like, "That's brilliant. You got your own show." The judge comes back, calls me up and said, "Austin, kid, you want a job at Fox?" And I mean, yeah, I don't want to scream because I don't want to blow out the microphone here screaming here. Some of you may be listening to headphones right now or in your car. But I mean, obviously, you can hear the smile in my voice right now, like how happy I was. I mean, what an amazing opportunity. I was in New York the first time, poor broke actor living in a roach ridden apartment, and, you know, playing guitar in the subways in Times Square, working at FAO Schwartz, working, you know, doing telemarketing, you know, doing the odd acting and modeling job here and there. And all of a sudden, I'm moving back to New York as the king of New York, a television producer at the Fox Business Network for Judge Napolitano's show, Freedom Watch. What a wonderful story. So that's, in some ways, Roger Ailes did inspire me. And if it wasn't for Roger Ailes, I wouldn't be even where I'm at today, which, you know, I'm not a big celebrity or anything like that. I'm not a household name, but I did run for president of the United States. And I wouldn't probably have had that opportunity if I hadn't been able to get the opportunity at Fox and ingratiate myself with some of the people there, some of whom I'm still very close friends with. But isn't that a wonderful story? That's my rags to riches, quote unquote, riches story, ladies and gentlemen. And that was my little anecdote about how Roger Ailes inspired me and made me the man I am today, in a sense. I mean, obviously, I did all the work myself, but, you know, that's the thing, is that I'm a great believer in luck, and I find that the harder I work, the more I have. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. You can download us on iTunes or on Stitcher so you can hear us on the go. We've also got the Podbean app. That's Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Go to podbean.com. You can download the app on your phone so you can get us every time I upload a new show. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful day.